Welcome to the Real Talk of Dental, where we pull back the bib and talk about what's really going on beneath the surface. Not just the charts, not just the systems. We're talking about the culture, the chaos, and the confessions. I'm Brandy Marzolino, and with 20 years deep in this industry, I am fresh out of patience for performative leadership. This is your space to laugh, cry, question everything, and maybe shout into a pillow between patients. We've got anonymous confessions, we've got call-ins, we've got ops room drama, and we've got the truth, served hot and a little too real. Think of this as your backstage pass to the break room no one dares to mic. Until now. There is a war going on in dentistry between dentists and hygienists. That's a quote directly from my guest today, Kendra Flowers, who started her career in the trenches serving the underserved population in dentistry, and it forever shifted her perception and her experience of her professional career in dentistry. She started out as an assistant, making her way to a hygienist, then going on to clinical operations, and all the while really promoting and advocating for better access to care. And now she's at the Harmony Health Foundation doing a lot of that advocacy work for these populations and really fighting for oral health care among everybody, not just those that are privileged enough to get it. We dive into the real quote-unquote hygiene shortage and how it's actually not a hygiene shortage, but perhaps the fact that hygienists are looking to carve their own path and come out from underneath the shadows of the dentists who predominantly still don't appreciate what their hygienists stand for. Kendra is a very opinionated person in the industry with the battle scars to prove it, and it's a great opportunity to really be able to hear her side of the story. One of the things I love most about Kendra is she truly represents a lot of the women that I support in this industry because she's rooted in her values and her beliefs, which is a huge part of our curriculum in the Empowered Leadership Experience for Women in Dental. And she is a force of nature with a whole lot to say. Kendra, welcome to the Real Talk of Dental. Super grateful for you to be here. And we got some stuff to talk about today. We want to talk about the issues regarding hygiene, doctors, the idea of being just a hygienist, public health, the role that you play in the industry, and then also what's happening in the industry. You've been involved in a lot of sides of it. A lot of insight as to where the profession is going. It sounds like, you know, from your perspective too, that it's losing some of its heart, you know, as being advocates for patient care, and the role that hygienists can play in the industry is much bigger than what everyone's getting credit for. So where do you want to start? What's on your heart today as far as what topic should we pick to deconstruct first?
We probably can start with the heart topic. I think that's something that hasn't been talked about enough. I think everyone is feeling it, but maybe they don't know the right words to put to it. So I would say what I have been voicing is that I feel like the passion and the heart of dentistry is being lost, and not in every aspect or every part of the industry, but definitely in private practice, which we'll talk about into our next topic of dental hygiene shortage or non-shortage of what we're feeling. And even I know you talk a lot about burnout. There's a lot of mental health illnesses and conditions within dentists. And I think a lot of this ties back to there. And I, by the way, am not an expert. This is all my opinion. This is what I've witnessed over my decades in dentistry. But, you know, all of us, well, I hope most of us started in dentistry because we wanted to make a difference with people. We wanted to help them. I knew I wanted to go into healthcare. I just knew I couldn't do nursing. It's too much for me. And so, you know, you go to work every day, even when you're in hygiene school or dental school, they're teaching, okay, what's the best thing for this patient? How can you make them better? And then you get out and it's, how can you make the most money? How can you produce more? And one, you're not usually prepared for that at all from an educational perspective. I don't know how to quote sell or do case acceptance. And so the way I was able to get through that, I had a really good coach that made me think about it from the perspective of getting the patient better, which I agree to, that they're, you recommend what you need for your patient and the money comes. But a lot of times there's a lot more pressure to do more with maybe borderline information or evidence for the patient. And so, you can feel very disconnected. And to be honest, I haven't practiced in a while. Physically, I can't, but also I've been in different roles that I just don't have the time to do that. And what dentists and hygienists and assistants are being asked to do on a day-to-day basis is insanity in the last 10 years. It feels like it's doubled in the amount of procedures, and every day there's something new coming up. And so I can only imagine what that also feels like is now I have to sell, now I have to do more, now I have less time. And it just takes away from where we started, which is why I love to volunteer or used to volunteer, why I like working in the public health space, because you get back to the root of I'm just trying to help the community and to make things better and more sustainable. And that was a lot. That's kind of where I'm starting from.
Yeah. And what are you seeing as a result with so many offices focusing on really just the numbers and the production side and the volume versus patient? What have you been seeing in response to that?
Yeah. So there's a couple different pathways you can go. So you can go down maybe the Medicaid side. And so we already knew Medicaid, Medicare is a numbers game. Just pure and simple from the business side, it's a numbers game. So you're having to see more patients, even though you're trying to do as good as you can. You can only, you still have to pay the bills. And Medicaid-based practices are usually loss or break even, right? And so with the rollback of, Medicaid reimbursements across multiple states, probably eventually most of the states, it's a real big challenge to even if you are in that public health space and the FQHC centers, you're grant funded. We've seen a lot of locations losing their grant funding and going under. I know of one in particular. And so I think that can hurt someone's psyche and their passion because they're just trying to do good and they can't afford to do it. So that's one piece, right? And so then it feels like, well, again, it's all for the money, even what little money there is. And then the private practice or, DSO space, it is what it is. It's a business. I understand. I help to run the business, so I get that fine balance. But when you talk to a lot of people from the medical side, same thing, same issue. But you have to remember that there are those on the medical side that are also paid based on outcomes. Dental is not there yet. And so everything is procedure. It's not even time-based, right? Like in some of the other countries. And so I think that can be a huge issue. So then when you're running into, okay, well, we're going to get away from insurances that don't dictate. Okay, so where's, 80% of Americans who have, HMO or PPO that's in network? Maybe that can't afford to go out of network. Who's treating those patients? Again, you aren't, because now you're focusing on a fee for service or a niche office and you're just continuously pulling away. There's a very new product that I think is amazing that reverses caries, right? It's very expensive. Very expensive if it's not something that's covered. And so I think there are some things that are great, but again, just like medical, that just are out of people's reach. And medicine is feeling the same way. It's all paperwork, it's all denials, it's all being told what to do by the insurance, or they don't have insurance and they can't afford it, or people are being bankrupt, right? By this is medical, not dental, but by their medical bills. And so across the industry, it doesn't feel good at all.
Do you have solutions for it, or where does your mind go in your sort of utopian view of dental? What would
Oh,
be an ideal situation?
yeah. And I think this is where we're at. I think we're feeling it. We are at a head right now, and nobody has the solution because there isn't a one. There isn't. Our entire system is broken. And they've been trying decades to fix it. And this is, why governments get shut down and every other thing, because there isn't a solution. Well, not one that it is quick and can just be done, right? And not everyone agrees with. But in my mind, and where I stand now with the organization that I work with as a nonprofit, is that honestly, it's just access for everyone, equal access. And I think whatever that looks like is not what everyone wants to hear. So if you have someone who can't afford it, then you need to make the insurance available for them. But you also have to make the insurance reimbursement something that the providers can do. I mean, if you are going to lose money being a business, you won't be in business, right? Or you just won't do it. And so that's also what we're seeing in our organization, is that, Medicaid providers are leaving in droves, or they have never existed in some of those difficult states that have low reimbursement. And so then it falls on public health or FQHCs, and again, their grants are being pulled, and it's hard in these economic times. So there's no solution. And in my mind, it really would be, how do we get and innovate all of these, or use all of these new innovations to make this access better? So we have rural health where it could be cost, but it also is literally, there's no dentist, or there's no UC in medical, there's no OBGYN within, 10 counties. And so how do you make these things accessible to others? I think it starts off with legislative, unfortunately. So I think one standardization is, if you look at businesses, DSOs, the more standard something is, the more likely you're gonna get to that point. So I know that, there are quality measures out there now in dental that people are working towards. I think we need to continue down that path. But also, you make outcome-based, requirement. Same thing with when we moved our medical health records or electronic health records to digital and made it a requirement. It happened, right? Until you make people do something, they're the masses aren't going to do it. But that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, and I've had some folks on this podcast too over this the last, several months talking about, public dentistry and how it's often sort of a dying part of dentistry where most people aren't really interested in serving and being involved in policy, even though the policy directly impacts the profession. But the idea is then you end up getting all these older voices at the table, and they're the ones that are driving policy and making decisions, and they don't have some of the younger spirits in there that are looking to make change. Like, what are your thoughts on the idea of public, dentistry and how that's showing up in the industry? And not so many people are talking about it. I mean, everywhere I go in the space of dentistry, it's about driving business and making more money and bigger and more and really heavy on the business side of things. So, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it definitely is two different sides of the coin. A lot of people don't hear about what's happening in the public health space, and even I don't, even though that's been my passion, until I joined a job where I literally had to go into the trenches, and I got to see how a majority of Americans are living with oral health disease and burden. I just think it's something, I don't want to say it's that you're burying your head in the sand, but you don't know what you don't know. So if you don't actively go out and look, and you'll even see the industry conferences. So, right, like I'm going to Midwinter, usually there's not a lot of public health, right? They're going to focus on their, national network of oral health access, or, public health association meetings. And so even those are somewhat separate. But a lot of times you don't have that overlap, because this is what I'm running into in our organization, as we are trying to work on expanding access. And sometimes the only place, there is to go to physically to get treatment done is a private practice dentist, and they don't accept Medicaid. So now what do you do? Okay, well, now you got to travel. God knows I have some that are traveling 5 hours away. I mean, it's a mess. But if you never see them in your practice and you don't know any different and you're very disconnected, then you wouldn't know. And this is why I say the heart of dentistry is being lost, because I have heard things come out of professionals and dentists' mouths that just made my mouth drop. Like, oh, that's the cost of a cell phone bill. Just don't pay that for a month. It's 2026. If you don't pay that for a month, then that might be your internet. You might be in school. And at the time I was at school, by the way. So that was their internet for school. That is maybe how they receive jobs. You think about Uber, you think about DoorDash. If this is how do they function without that? And it's not sometimes as easy as not paying a bill or giving up something that could be necessary. In your mind, it might work, but for a lot of people, it doesn't. And I mentioned this on a fundraiser I did. I said that this is not usually a choice. I mean, it's a choice, but it's not something that they willingly want to choose. They're choosing food, work, shelter, childcare, something like that is in the place of that. So when I hear some of these conversations of like, oh, they're choosing neglect, or they just don't care about their mouth, or they don't know any different, this is what they want, and well, they went out and got this bag or whatever it is. Now, that's a different story, but your patients should always be able to afford this. No, maybe if you're catering to the top 10%, sure. I'm sure I am one of those people that can choose to not do something or do something, but there are whole communities that aren't choosing this necessarily.
And it sounds like folks in the industry that are exposed to the public health side of dentistry and that level of care seem to have that much more of a commitment to getting greater access to care. I think there's a lot of people that come out of dental school or maybe even hygiene school and they go straight into private practice or DSO or something like that. And they never really get exposed to these things. Or maybe their office does a mission trip or a charitable trip or have a charity day or something like that. And it's sort of these feel-good experiences. But I have noticed that anyone that's been in the public health arena, essentially, have become very, very passionate about it. And I don't know. I mean, do you think it's something that people should expose themselves more to in the industry just to get like a broader context of what's possible? Because I feel like people are sort of shielded from it in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think they're shielded. I know there's a lot of dental schools and hygiene schools that it's a requirement. My hygiene school is a requirement to serve in the public health setting. A lot of those people you mentioned are also those that were recipients of those types of care or received almost no care. We're usually pretty passionate because we know what it's like to not have those things. And the ADA, Marco, I love him, by the way. His data is amazing and very objective. But I remember he posted something about why are people of color dentists the ones serving the lowest populations? I mean, it's right there because we're the ones that usually have received it. And so there's also, I think there's a twofold issue of the cost of education. So I thought about going to dental school until I realized I would be almost 40 with $500,000 in debt, and I didn't really want to be locked in. And so I stopped my education and I'm glad where I'm at, but I can't imagine coming out with $500,000 in debt and trying to go into public health, which doesn't necessarily pay like it does in private practice or, a high-end practice, especially if you're getting student loan reimbursement or loan repayments taken back currently. It's just not going to happen. And so I get both sides. I understand because I actually wanted to serve one of our reservations in Arizona, and I made more money as an assistant than I would as a new grad hygienist. And I couldn't. I had loans too. I said, I can't pay for that. So when I say the whole system is broken, I mean the whole system is broken.
Hey, I just want to pop in on today's episode and talk to you about this new GPT I wrote called Boundary Boss GPT. And it's for those moments where you've said yes to something and immediately felt that pit in your stomach, or maybe you've now written five drafts of an email because you're trying not to sound mean, even though you're exhausted and you swear you've said this thing so many times to the same person, or you're kind of sick and tired of staying late, taking it on, smoothing things over. And wonder why you're the one that's always burning out. A lot of the conversations that I have on this podcast, we often hear about people hitting these walls of burnout and oftentimes not even knowing what to say. So that's why I built Boundary Boss GPT. It's kind of like having me in your pocket when you're about to respond to a text, email, or team issue, and you just don't know what to say because your people-pleasing brain is completely hijacking you. This is going to help you have clarity, confidence, and self-respect without the guilt, over-explaining, or the drama. Go ahead and grab it in the show notes below. It's totally free and you're going to love it. Okay, now back to this awesome conversation. So let's pivot a little bit, because I know we talked about too that, you know, before we started our conversation, talking about the battle currently in the industry surrounding hygiene. And I guess it's even more intense than I was even aware as far as what hygienists are experiencing and the conversation around what hygienists are able to do and how they're being suppressed, I suppose, like even in the industry too. So let's talk about that, because I know you have a lot of thoughts and feelings around being just a hygienist in the dental space.
Yeah, there's a lot going on right now. I guess we can start there. So what I call it is a war. I mean, this is real talk. This is real talk. Mm-hmm. There's a war going on right now between the professions, between dentists and hygienists. Do I think that it should be happening? Yes, unfortunately. The way it's happening, do I think it should be happening? No. I think that it probably should be happening in a much higher level, more democracy driven. But, you know, I understand. I was with the ADHA or GDHA in Georgia, and there is a lot of politics there that put a lot of limits on what you can and cannot do as a hygienist when you can go to a different state and do something completely different you were trained to do. It's stopping you in some cases where I've seen when I was on the business side of things of being able to provide services to those patients that need it. Yet we can't find dentists that are willing to go out and serve those patients. So you have hygienists who just have their hands tied behind their backs that want to be, right? We were made to be public health facing, or just like nurses. And so not being able to serve the population you want to serve is annoying. I mean, there's no other way to say that. You just want to serve these people, and you won't have a dentist that'll come to an area and serve these people first. It's frustrating. And so there's that piece. Now, I think COVID, though, I've seen it in my personal life. COVID definitely moved this war, is what I'm going to call it, up. So I think when a lot of the hygienists had a break for a few months, without being yelled at, without their bodies being hurt, being able to spend time with their kids, even if it was hard. Some of these people, which I had preaching before, who were temping or were 1099 and had no employment, like there was no unemployment insurance or, you know, payments, that was difficult for them. And they realized, well, what's going on? If you're telling me everything that I have to do, then you should be paying me this way. Why am I working in this toxic environment? I mean, I had friends that didn't go back for years and are just now starting to re-enter the workforce. I know that there's conversations of not being respected and not being held and really where we should be being held. And so if you think about a nurse, this is how I used to explain it to my patients. We're a nurse for dental. And so we do a lot of the work, at least when it comes to the day-to-day, you know, gathering data and all of those things and being the ones that are seeing the patients and explaining everything to them. And we went through a lot of education to do it. I went to school with nurses up until I got into the dental hygiene program. We took all the same prereqs. And I think that's slightly some ignorance happening from the dentists. They just don't know the level of education that we go through. Now, you'll say, well, you know, I would never let this hygienist. There's always that. This hygienist or this dentist that maybe should not be treating patients or working on patients. You'll always have that. But when you look at it as a whole, we're highly educated people. And what's been coming out in the last 10 years, oh my goodness. Like they say we are not mid-level providers. We're mid-level providers. I mean, ultimately, we are doing everything except for, say, the words, you have a cavity, or you have this, or you have that. We're doing all of the work there. I'm expected to present it to the dentist as if we were diagnosing. And so you keep hearing the word co-diagnosing, but we can't. Or we can make all these recommendations, but can't write the prescription. And so I understand they went through a lot more education than we did. And so I don't doubt that. But I think the respect in some cases is not. They see us as money makers and a profitability center, which we are, but we can be much, much more than that. And so I think the industries need to have conversations, and they're not going to be able to because organized dentistry is very old school. And I just don't think that they're going to be able to work it out in the way that they need to be. And ultimately, we are where medicine was 50 years ago when nurses were still under the direct supervision of physicians, and they became autonomous, and it works. So I think that's where we're headed. It's not fun. It's not a fun time right now.
Yeah. And so I want to play. So I actually have the truth bomb that people can
Oh.
share, on the Real Talk of Dental here. And we actually had a caller share her thoughts about hygiene. And I thought I'd bring it into this conversation to get your feedback on it. It sounds like she's making more of a statement than asking a question, but certainly want to hear your take on it as well. So I'll play it here.
The truth bomb in dental is there is not a hygiene shortage. It is a pseudo shortage or a perceived shortage. What it is if you go run the numbers in the states, you will find that the number of hygienists are the same. We have retained our license. What's happening is we are choosing not to work in toxic environments. We are choosing not to work for doctors that want us to provide patient care at a lower standard because they only want to give us a certain amount of time. We're choosing not to work with instruments that are not acceptable. We are choosing not to work in a micromanaged environment. We are choosing not to work in an environment that doesn't allow us to rise to what our education is in what we are allowed to do. We are oral health care providers and preventionists. We can talk about nutrition and we can talk about prevention and blood pressure and all that stuff, and doctors aren't allowing us to do that. They just see us as pretty little girls that pick and shine teeth, and we're just choosing not to do that anymore. So it's a perceived pseudo shortage. It's we are not going to tolerate the low wages, lack of benefits, and toxic environments.
Woo! All right, put her on the front lines.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's really speaking to what
So
you're
there's,
talking about, though. Yeah.
yeah, and there's two different kind of pillars here. So there's those that are being asked to provide substandard of care. And I was one of those. I refused to do that. I used to bring my own instruments when I temped. I had my own LLC so I could pay all of my own taxes. And so I am probably a more proactive hygienist. I knew everything that I did or didn't want. But then you also have on the other side where they do see your worth and they do see your value, but they're asking you to overwork in a way, if that makes sense. Or they're asking too much of what little time or what resources you're given. So I think there's two spectrums here that you have to pay attention to. I agree that it's a pseudo shortage. I think that there are people that don't want to go back to work that do have licenses. I have two licenses in two different states, and I haven't worked in quite a time a while because in a lot of people, my insurance back up. If something doesn't happen, at least I still have this degree and this license that I did, right? And I still can go to work if something happens in my career. Or it just is very difficult to get your license, and so you keep it up. Or you need it in certain jobs. There's DSOs or clinical leadership positions that require you to have your license, and so you have it, but you don't actually practice day to day. No, but I agree. I've been called the girls within the last 10 years. I've had dentists yell at me, scream at me, say, "I'm the dentist. I know better than you." I mean, you need to be able to have those collaborative conversations. The best offices I ever worked at were ones that respected me, respected my opinion, and I the same, but didn't treat me less than as a provider. It's a different level, right? I always saw we're the prevention specialist, we're the prevention leaders. And then you're the restorative treatment leader, right? That's how I saw it and how we worked together. And so you'd have those conversations like now, especially now, okay, what services can we do to prevent on this patient? And then, or what are not preventable or treatable within that minimally invasive? And then how do we go to the treatment and restorative space? So I think until people are willing to have that conversation, I've spoke to many dentists and many hygienists about this. The dentists who say that they love their hygienists and respect them in all ways, financially, emotionally, physically, by the way, I've had things thrown at me, they say they never have an issue finding a hygienist if there's ever an opening. But it's like any good employer. And so people are going to want to work for you, right? It's like and I don't know anything about Google, but I'm just assuming the Google and the Amazon, right? Like it's everyone wants to work there. So same thing will happen with a private practice. And I think with social media and everything else, word gets around fast. If you aren't a good provider or you're an a-hole, I've seen it on Facebook. I mean, there were some that like, don't answer or don't respond to this. It's not like it used to be. Things move way too quickly for you to be a bad boss or a bad employer. And same thing for goes for the hygienist. You're a bad hygienist or you're disrespectful or lazy or whatever, all of the above, it'll get back around. It's as if you're new to dentistry, it is a small world, and especially if you're in a local region.
Yeah. And the idea too of being quote unquote just a hygienist, like you were saying also, is like the ability to, offer insight on business and strategy and even operations, because there are some hygienists that, yeah, there's some hygienists that want to just stay in their lane and come in and do what they want to do. And then there's also some that really see the bigger picture and, really want to make a difference in the whole experience and want to see things improve. And there is the idea that people in leadership, or maybe even the doctors too, are just like, nah, stay in your lane. Like, you're here to do hygiene and not take the input seriously. So what do you think about that?
Oh, 100%. You hear that big sigh? I've experienced my whole entire dental hygiene career, which actually motivates me even more. If you tell me I can't do something, I just want to do it. That's just me as a person. But, being told you can't do this just because you're a hygienist or just because of this. And I've experienced it. I've not gotten jobs because I'm a hygienist and have been told that, well, we need a dentist or a licensed dentist. And I say, well, why? If I have this work around this, and this, I see, this, I can build this for you. And so being just a hygienist, I think, starts clinically, like you are just there for your cleaning. You just clean, you just polish, you just fluoride. And then it's expanded outside of that to where I go back to the nurses, right? If we're the nurses of of dentistry, we do a lot and we see a lot. A lot of times the hygienists are really organized. Sometimes they're the back office leader. They become an office manager because they see the whole picture. And so that's been frustrating for me, is that can you not see me other than a dental hygienist? And so I started leaving dental hygienists off of things, off my resume or RDH or those types of things, my clinical experience, because I wanted people to see more than just a dental hygienist. And which is sad, because for me, when I graduated, it was one of the proudest moments of my life. It's really hard. It's unreasonably hard. That's a whole nother conversation, to become a hygienist. But I wanted people to see the business mind, the strategic mind. I've been in compliance, I've done education, I've done a little bit of everything. And so to be able to put that all together, now I will. Not an expert in everything. And so I think knowing your lane is important. I don't necessarily want to talk to dentists. I can about certain clinical things, but they prefer to hear it from a peer. Those what I would consider more progressive don't mind listening to a hygienist whatsoever, as long as it's scientifically sound and they know what they're doing. But a lot of time from a business standpoint, we can put it together because we're organized. And so I would say to anyone in the industry, I think it's gotten better than it was maybe, 10, 15 years ago, but don't let previous titles stand in the way. A lot of times it does make the individual stronger at what they do. Now, what I do is I can see it not only from the business standpoint, but from a clinician standpoint. And so I think that I bring a lot more value than maybe someone, and I've worked with people like this, office managers or operational leaders that came from Target. Like, you don't even understand. Do you know how hard that is? You just ask them to do something that's hard and they're going to hate you forever. So I say, this is how you do this. This is how we think. This is, all of those things. We have a really good perspective on all things clinical.
Yeah, I love that because also, I think different perspectives are always super valuable, especially hygienists are in the trenches with the patients and really being impacted by general operations in the offices and the flow. And I mean, they're seeing so many aspects of the business, and it's then impacts them on their day to day, right? So I think it's the combination of working chairside with patients and having that experience of, I mean, how many patients is a hygienist see in any given day, right? I mean, there's so many. And being able to hear the frustrations and the complaints and the issues and the symptoms that patients are having, where typically a dentist is really only with patients a fraction of the time. And if they are, you know, with the patient for prolonged periods of time, it's because they're doing a big procedure and they're usually not connecting at the level always that a hygienist is. And usually they always say losing a hygienist is a big deal for an office because the patients tend to follow hygienists than they do even the doctors. So I think really being able to respect the hygienist's opinion and thoughts and getting that perspective is so valuable. I always love unique sets of eyes on anything because it offers different solutions, different perspectives. And anyone that knows anything about, you know, success is welcoming in those alternative perspectives. But I do see what you're saying too, just even from over here, from the coaching side of things, like being at conferences or events, like anytime a hygienist is building a new career for her or himself and like jumping into the business side of things, there's sometimes this like, oh, look at this sweet, you know, hygienist trying to do something, you know, it's sort of this, like, there is a filter. I don't feel that way. I'm saying there's like a general vibe though, that I can feel that it's almost like, oh, you're trying to be something more than a hygienist. Like there's just sort of this attitude about it. Good for you.
It's the South. Bless your heart. Good for you. That's exactly what it is. By the way, I did not experience that until I moved to Georgia. But yes, and so I think that's part of it. Now, is every hygienist that way? No. But no. You'll know the ones, and I'm probably one of those weirdo ones where I wanted to understand the business side when I was an assistant. Like, well, how does this get paid for? How much does this cost? And how do we do this? And how do we do that? And so, again, there are some that never will be that mindset and don't ever want to be. But there are others that I think it goes across all careers. I saw this when I worked at Walmart is, you know, you could have came from, I think, their previous CEO, right? He pushed carts and then he became the CEO and like super millionaire. And so it's like, if you look outside of that, stop boxing people into one thing. You need to look at them from their skill set or potential skill set and less into what they were trained to do, because easily, I mean, you can train anyone to do something, but to have them think in a very specific manner, I'm learning as I get older, is not as easy as it is for some. So like my Clifton Strengths is futuristic and strategic. Dude, you want to know where you think you'll be in 10 years? I know it in 5 minutes. That is just how my brain thinks. And so for me, clinical was hard because I'm like, okay, well, I'm cleaning your teeth, but if you don't do this, you're going to be here in 10 years. And these patients don't care. They're like, well, I just need to be at lunch, you know, in an hour. Like, this is not where I'm at. And so in my mind, it's like, well, this is why I'm good at systems, because I know exactly what you need to build upon and move towards. And so, and same for dentists. Not every dentist is very skilled at business. We know this historically. That's why they have consultants and management companies. And so, you know, you just have to lean into your strengths and realize people have strengths outside of their careers, like not just a mom or just a hygienist. So
yeah. Well, thank you so much, Kendra. I know that I could talk to you all day, and I'm excited to see you in a few days at Chicago Midwinter. What would you like to say to anyone out there, like a hygienist or anyone out there struggling or looking for a pep talk? What do you think would be, how do you want to leave the conversation?
I think not even outside of my hygienist. I'm very good with my hygienist. I feel like sometimes it is the dentist, because hygienists, they're feeling the same way we're feeling. Right? They're being asked, especially with the rise of DSOs, they're being asked to do more and more with less and less. The pressure is on from everyone. What I would say is, if we can all go back to the heart of dentistry, I think it makes a difference. If you can do one thing in a day that makes a difference in someone's life, it will make you immensely more grateful for what you're doing. It makes life a little bit easier, especially if you're having a hard time and maybe in a toxic situation or you're working your way out. Because if you guys have followed my career, it's taken me many years to get here. And so do what the great Dr. Scott Kalness says, who's my mentor and has helped me through my whole entire career. You'll do well by doing good. Just do some good in the world. We need it.
Yeah. Preach. Yeah. I'll get down with that for sure. Well, thank you so much for being on. You're amazing, and keep fighting the good fight.
Thank you.
You just listened to The Real Talk of Dental. If it hit, if it stung, if it made you feel just a little more human, good. That's the point. This isn't about fixing practices. It's about healing people. And if you're brave enough to show up real in this industry, you're my kind of leader. Subscribe, call in, send your wildest workplace confession. And most importantly, don't clean up for anyone. The mess, that's where the magic lives. We'll see you again on the next episode.